Part 3. You'll hear part of an interview with a man called Tony Elliott, who founded a magazine called Time Out. For questions 15 to 20, choose the answer A, B, C or D, which fits best according to what you hear. You now have 1 minute to look at Part 3.
OK, welcome back to the programme. Well, for the 100,000 or more people in London who buy every issue, Time Out is an invaluable guide to what's going on in the city. In its lists, they can find everything from films, plays, concerts and nightclubs to exhibitions, sports, opera, dance and special events. And I'm talking now to Tony Elliott, the man who started it all, back in 1968. Tony, what gave you the idea?
Well, back then it was very hard to find out about those things. There were magazines. There was a magazine called What's On, which was a weekly, which is still around, rather kind of conventional in its approach. And you could look in the evening paper, or you could look in the music press, to get information. Mm-hmm. But nothing covered everything all in one place. So I perceived there was a gap, and I suppose, well, to some extent, I just produced a magazine for myself. And it turned out a lot of other people wanted the same thing.
Mm. At first, the magazine was just a sheet sold hand-to-hand in the street, wasn't it?
Well, I started with a few like-minded people, and we did actually put it into newsagents. People do seem to think we started as a bunch of idealistic amateurs. But I have to say that I think we were actually pretty professional from day one. It was coming out every 3 weeks, so I'd spend three or four days actually going round something like 300 newsagents. The selling in the street was partly to do with getting copies sold so that we actually had some cash. But it also had this kind of inbuilt market research thing, where you'd show people what you were doing and they go, "Oh, really?" And a lot of people said, "Oh, that's a modern What's On. That's what we've been looking for."
So did you have any publishing experience before this?
I did a regular column for a magazine at university, which was quite serious. It used to do single themes per issue, like provincial theatre or education or racialism. And then when I took it over, I promptly changed it into being a kind of a contemporary arts magazine. We did interviews with artists, rock stars, writers, people like that.
Were you still at university when you started Time Out?
Yeah. Technically, I was actually on holiday for the summer vacation. And as far as the university was concerned, I was supposed to be going to France to teach. I think I told them I would do, because, you know, you go away for a term or a year if you're studying French, and, then I just started doing the magazine.
And you didn't go back?
Yes, well, there was a point when I suddenly realised that I was doing what I wanted to do.
So it soon took off, didn't it? I mean, it was monthly first, and then it went weekly, didn't it, in a very short time?
Well, it started monthly, and then we went three weekly. For some reason, that was the highest frequency we could do. Mm-hmm. Then we went fortnightly, which is quite a valid frequency for publication, and then inevitably we went weekly. Stimulated, I have to say, by the threat of some competition from some people who were starting a similar publication.
Oh, yes, I was going to say, someone else must have spotted the gap. I mean, you identified it, but there must have been big publishing houses who thought, "Oh, hang on, we can have some of this too."
Yeah, I think the truth is nobody really realised what the significance of the magazine was, because... Well, in a sense, it started very tiny, very small, and then built up and built up, and a lot of publishers and a lot of advertisers also were very, dismissive of our readers. I mean, you know, still, even today, you get occasional accusations like, it's not a particularly significant readership, and a lot of students read it, don't they? Things like that. People just didn't realise that, we were creating a readership that was very significant.
The readership's grown up with you as well, hasn't it? A lot of people, I imagine, who were buying it as students in the 60s are now buying it as parents of teenage children these days.
Oh, well, that would imply our readership's now older, which isn't the case. And although the numbers have expanded, well, it's true that there are more people over 35 buying it than there were when it started, the readership hasn't really changed. It's still basically intelligent young people who do things.
OK, well, we'll take a quick break now and then I'll be back to talk to Tony some more.
Now you'll hear the recording again.
OK, welcome back to the programme. Well, for the 100,000 or more people in London who buy every issue, Time Out is an invaluable guide to what's going on in the city. In its lists, they can find everything from films, plays, concerts and nightclubs to exhibitions, sports, opera, dance and special events. And I'm talking now to Tony Elliott, the man who started it all, back in 1968. Tony, what gave you the idea?
Well, back then it was very hard to find out about those things. There were magazines. There was a magazine called What's On, which was a weekly, which is still around, rather kind of conventional in its approach. And you could look in the evening paper, or you could look in the music press, to get information. Mm-hmm. But nothing covered everything all in one place. So I perceived there was a gap, and I suppose, to some extent, I just produced a magazine for myself. And it turned out a lot of other people wanted the same thing.
Mm. At first, the magazine was just a sheet sold hand-to-hand in the street, wasn't it?
Well, I started with a few like-minded people, and we did actually put it into newsagents. People do seem to think we started as a bunch of idealistic amateurs. But I have to say that I think we were actually pretty professional from day one. It was coming out every 3 weeks, so I'd spend three or four days actually going round something like 300 newsagents. The selling in the street was partly to do with getting copies sold so that we actually had some cash. But it also had this kind of inbuilt market research thing, where you'd show people what you were doing and they go, oh, really? And a lot of people said, oh, that's a modern What's On. That's what we've been looking for.
So did you have any publishing experience before this?
I did a regular column for a magazine at university, which was quite serious. It used to do single themes per issue, like provincial theatre or education or racialism. And then when I took it over, I promptly changed it into being a kind of a contemporary arts magazine. We did interviews with artists, rock stars, writers, people like that.
Were you still at university when you started Time Out?
Yeah. Technically, I was actually on holiday for the summer vacation. And as far as the university was concerned, I was supposed to be going to France to teach. I think I told them I would do, because, you know, you go away for a term or a year if you're studying French, and, then I just started doing the magazine.
And you didn't go back?
Yes, well, there was a point when I suddenly realised that I was doing what I wanted to do.
So it soon took off, didn't it? I mean, it was monthly first, and then it went weekly, didn't it, in a very short time?
Well, it started monthly, and then we went three-weekly. For some reason, that was the highest frequency we could do. Mm-hmm. Then we went fortnightly, which is quite a valid frequency for publication, and then inevitably we went weekly. Stimulated, I have to say, by the threat of some competition from some people who were starting a similar publication.
Oh, yes, I was going to say, someone else must have spotted the gap. I mean, you identified it, but there must have been big publishing houses who thought, oh, hang on, we can have some of this too.
I think the truth is nobody really realised what the significance of the magazine was, because, in a sense, it started very tiny, very small, and then built up and built up, and a lot of publishers and a lot of advertisers also were very, dismissive of our readers. I mean, you know, still, even today, you get occasional accusations like, it's not a particularly significant readership, and a lot of students read it, don't they? Things like that. People just didn't realise that, we were creating a readership that was very significant.
The readership's grown up with you as well, hasn't it? A lot of people, I imagine, who were buying it as students in the 60s are now buying it as parents of teenage children these days.
Oh, well, that would imply our readership's now older, which isn't the case. And although the numbers have expanded, well, it's true that there are more people over 35 buying it than there were when it started, the readership hasn't really changed. It's still basically intelligent young people who do things.
Mm. Okay, well, we'll take a quick break now, and then I'll be back to talk to Tony some more.
That's the end of part 3. Now turn to part 4.